Welcome to the first ever College Football Weekly, sponsored by the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 blog. My name is Brant Parsons. Sitting with me, our college football expert, Matt Michelle. Well, what better time to get this started than in the late July, huh?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is a all of a sudden we go from the slow summertime to the media days are upon us, and all sorts of stuff still coming out.
And it has been an off season that, the news has been, as it usually is, off the field. And the biggest story, SEC Media Days took place last week, ACC Media Days over the weekend, Conference USA, Big Tens this week. But the SEC Media Days is where this was mostly focused. But the story, again, is agents in college football. And it affected Florida's interviews and talk. Alabama had to address it. Georgia had to address it. South Carolina had to address it. Even outside the SEC, North Carolina was really where it kind of all started. But agents and paying college football players, it's the story right now.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is, it's not a new story. I mean, this is something that's been going on for years. And players have had to watch what they say, what they do. Schools have compliance officers, departments, basically to prevent from this kind of stuff from happening. I talked to a Florida great, Ricky Natiel, this weekend, and he talked about an instance where he was confronted his senior year, with an agent offering him some cash. And, he walked away and he talked about it, but it's tough to do with a lot of players they come from tough backgrounds. And, when someone shoves a briefcase full of money in your face, it's hard for some of these kids to walk away.
And these guys are going to be getting the money, too, a lot of times. It's not necessarily your third-string punter that has to worry about an agent. These are guys, the story out of Florida was Marquise Pouncey. Well, he was an 18th pick in the NFL draft. If he took money between the SEC title game and Sugar Bowl, as it's been alleged, he was going to make that money. It wasn't like this was his only shot at it. Alabama's story is Marcel Darius, who went to a party on South Beach, which a guy from South Carolina, some other kids are being checked into, was hosted by an agent. He's a guy that's supposed to be drafted. He's probably one of the top defensive ends in the country. Nick Saban addressed it at SEC Media Day, and here's what his take on agents.
I don't think it's anything but greed that is creating it right now on behalf of the agents. And agents that do this, and I hate to say this, but, I mean, how are they any better than a pimp? I mean, I have no respect for people who do that to young people. None. How would you feel if they did it to your child?
I don't know, Matt. What do you think? Are agents pimps?
I don't know. If I was a pimp, I'd kind of be upset by that comment. But I don't necessarily know if they're pimps. I think what an agent does is, it's not necessarily they come in and they offer them loads and loads of money. What it is they come to them and they with the promise of, I'll give you something now if you pay me back later and obviously help promote me or sign with me. Again, a lot of times it's not necessarily just for the player. An agent will do something. In the Reggie Bush case, for instance, an agent will go through and, provide for someone's family, provide them a house, provide them transportation to games, offer them all sorts of things that, a kid who's maybe coming from, a tough background can't provide for his family or himself. And so basically the agents, they're kind of facilitator. Are they pimps? Again, that's a pretty harsh word. But again, also too, I find it ironic that Saban comes out blasting this when two of his own players are, kind of being questioned. Definitely, and would have been said if it was someone else who wasn't, who had no one under investigation.
Well, the coaches seem to be taking a "oh my God, they're out to get us" attitude, and it is a story that we are dealing with. These aren't your Scott Boris's that are doing this. It's a cutthroat business in the agent's world. There are a lot of agents out there that have no clients. And so their way of getting a client is to do something like this. These aren't your big names that are going after these guys. These are your small agents. But it is kind of ironic to me that the coaches are coming out like this. And in fact, here's Urban Meyer at SEC Media Days talking about it being an epidemic.
I think it's reached an epidemic. And I think there has to be some reaction to this epidemic. And from what I've heard, I'm going to do the best to support student athletes that play college football, because that's my job.
That's Urban Meyer at SEC Media Days talking about agents being an epidemic on campus, and it makes me laugh because these are the same coaches that let these agents on campus. These are the same coaches that let agents roam the sidelines at games. They get credentialed. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard agents talk since all this has kind of broken, and they say, well, you know, we have to be licensed. We have to go through all this testing and background checks and sign all these paperwork to be able to go to places like Florida. But you're still letting the pimps on your campus. You're still laying around these players. Do you think some of this, I think, has to lie in the coach's responsibility?
Well, exactly. I think it falls on coaches. I think it falls on schools. You know, it's their job. Like I said, they're compliance officers or compliance departments on campuses, and it's their job to make sure these kids know what is going on. Yes, these kids should know what's right and wrong. But the hard, you know, it's very hard for someone who's 18, 19, 20 years old, who, like I said, doesn't come from a lot, you know, maybe, or is all of a sudden now being tempted. And like you said, there are guys walking around campus, there are guys at games, they're, you know, they're always kind of there in the background. Plus, an example of what happened recently, you know, players are invited down to parties. You know, they're going to South Beach. Who's not going to have a good time at South Beach at a party? And, you know, it's very tempting. And you figure to yourself, hey, I'm going to be drafted in the next year. I'm going to make a lot of money. You know, why don't I just go ahead and take advantage of that now? It's like borrowing from a bank, except this bank, you know, happens to, you know, charge a lot higher interest rate than you're gonna get.
And if you're a 20-year-old kid and you're the big man on campus, and let's face it, nowadays these athletes are really being coddled growing up. You're always the star, you always get away with everything you do. Someone wants you to come down and spend a weekend on South Beach, all expenses paid, and have a good time. I mean, there's not too many kids out there that are going to pass this up. And I think the agents know that, and they go after these guys that maybe they get kind of those feelers on, well, he knows he's going to go pro. Maybe I can slip this in a little bit early. You know, the whole Marquise Pouncey thing where it's alleged he took $100,000. You know, when people say, well, why not wait till after the Sugar Bowl? Well, you know what? The agent came with the money then, because the agent doesn't want another agent to come in with $100,000 mm-hmm. and get him before the Sugar Bowl, because then, you know what? Then he doesn't have Marquise Pouncey. Mm-hmm. Again, these are allegations at all these schools are being investigated by the NCAA. I don't even know if Pouncey signed with the same agent that allegedly gave him the money or anything like that. But these are agents that are fighting for their livelihood. And until the schools, I think, and the coaches, they need to do something to kind of keep these agents farther away, because they're still going to get to them.
I think you're right there. I also think the NFL needs to step up. You know, the players' associations, you know, they need to, you know, Roger Goodell needs to step up and find a way to get these guys. You know, if they get kids when they're, you know, still in school and they cause all these problems, they should look at their licenses. They should have these guys' licenses revoked or suspended or put on probation, or, you know, they should really make them almost like a most watched list. That way then you're not, you know, you can keep these guys off of campuses, you know, maybe make things a little easier. You know, all these kids, it's not anything new that these kids know each other. You know, most of these players know each other from schools to school to school. So, you know, when one guy an agent gets into a kid and he says, hey, you know, why don't you come down to this party, you know, tell your friends. That's how this spreads. That's why it's not uncommon that this instance right now occurred at 4 or 5 different schools. And it may have occurred at even more we just haven't heard about yet.
Right. And as you said, these are kids that, they know everybody. They know each other. They know the stuff is going on. And the NFL, I think, the thing you look at, the agents, the people who are getting in trouble aren't the agents necessarily. It's the schools. It's the kids that come after these kids, mm-hmm. because then their team gets rocked by suspensions, or they can't participate in bowl games, or you know, things that affect the program. But the agents, until they feel that they're going to have a really strict, stiff penalty that's really going to hurt them, it has to be financial too, they're still going to be doing this, because in their mind right now, it's a calculated risk, and it must be paying off because they keep on doing it. We talked about a little about the SEC Media Days. When we come back, ACC Media Days, and some high expectations for Jimbo already? We'll find out. And you're listening to the first ever broadcast of College Football Weekly, brought to you by Orlando Sentinel, College Gridiron 365 blog. College football every day of the year, and really in this state, it holds up.
It does, very much so.
I, you know, when it first started, people may wonder, you're going to talk about college football every day of the year? In this state, you can get away with it because, well, you've got Florida, you've got Miami, you've got Florida State, you've got up-and-comers UCF and USF. And the stories this week, again, even at these media days, SEC focused a little bit on Florida. They were picked to win the SEC East, picked to lose to Alabama in the SEC title game. And now Florida State at media days in ACC under Jimbo Fisher. First year under him, he took over for Bobby Bowden. Of course, everybody knows that story. some high expectations already coming out of Tallahassee.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, from just talking with some fans and some of the media, you know, Florida State is supposed to have a pretty good year. I'm not necessarily sold 100% on that. I think they'll have a good year. Christian Ponder, again, I think, you know, if he got hurt last year. If he stays healthy, I think he could have a great year. You know, they're already pushing for Heisman Trophy for him, which is, I think, pretty lofty expectations. You know, the Seminoles, again, you know, Jimbo Fisher, I think, has got a lot of talent to work with. I think on the defensive side, they're going to have some struggles. You know, last year we saw a little bit of that. You know, we saw in that Miami game, you know, they gave up a lot of yards against a lot of teams, which means Jimbo's offense is going to have to score. And I think with Ponder, that will happen.
Yeah, I think that's the key at Florida State this year. You're going to have the offense. Christian Ponder, of course, at ACC Media Days, named the preseason Offensive Player of the Year for the conference. Nothing really shocking there. The senior quarterback really was putting together all the signs of a great year last year before he got hurt, and you know, high expectations coming back. He's got talent at the skill positions, but the defense is still an issue at Florida State. Mark Stoops is coming in. They're going to change some schemes. They're going to try and get back to the days when Florida State's defense was what it was known for, and good linebackers, good defensive backs, tough against run and pass. But right now, you're changing the system. You're trying to find personnel to fit it, and you might not have all those pieces yet. So we might be putting, you know, the horse a little bit far ahead there when you start saying, hey, FSU is back this year. I still think defensively there's some holes that need to be fixed.
Yeah, definitely. You know, they lost some talent to graduation, you know, this season. I think he's going to – I think Stoops was a good hire. I think he brings an aggressive defensive scheme. I think in regards to the secondary, Greg Reed will help them out. You know, I mean, but again, there's a lot of inexperience there. And against a league where you're seeing players like Ja'Cory Harris, you know, quarterbacks, you know, teams that can score a lot of points, your defense really needs to stand up.
I mean, this is a team last year gave away 40 points to Clemson, gave 49 to Georgia Tech. You know, as you said, lost to Miami after Miami scored 38, gave 37 points up to Florida. These are all losses. These are all coming in the L column. This is a Florida State defense that need a lot of work. Not good news today out of Florida State. Nigel Carr arrested, suspended, apparently, as long as it's a felony that he's being charged with, he's going to be suspended from the team. That's what Andrew Carter told us today up in Tallahassee. Not a good start for Florida State. You know, not what Jimbo Fisher wanted. You know, not quite up to Florida standards as far as arrest, if you want to talk a little smack.
No, but I think if you're Jimbo Fisher and you're heading off just to be the spotlight in the media for 2 days, the last thing you want to hear when your plane lands is, oh, by the way, one of your players was arrested. I'm sure that's not what he, you know, and Jimbo has been trying, from what we've been hearing, is, you know, trying to change the culture at Florida State. You know, he wants to bring in a winning idea, bring back those years like it was in the years past, you know, bring back that the feeling. I think what helps them this year is, you know, now that Bobby Bowden is retired, and that whole the specter of whose program is it really is gone, and it's his program, he can actually focus on getting the players he needs to get.
Yeah, he's now in charge. It's now Jimbo's team. Mm-hmm. I think the last couple of years you did kind of have like that Jimbo's going to run it someday, but it's still Bobby's team, but Bobby's checked out, and I think now it's Stoops' team on defense. It's Jimbo's team overall, and I think you're going to see some changes. Not a schedule that necessarily puts them in the top either. You know, they have to go to Oklahoma. You know, they play BYU, a tough ACC schedule. They do avoid Virginia Tech, who was picked to win the ACC today by the media members attending ACC Media Days, but they're expected to beat Florida State to win the ACC, so high expectations in Jimbo's first year. And then just locally here in Orlando, UCF Conference USA Media Days took place over the weekend, and it's an even numbered year, so if you go by that, it's going to be terrible for the Knights this year, right?
Well, that's what, you know, that's been the last 6 years, that's been the knock on UCF and George O'Leary, is that it seems to be cyclical. Every year, you know, every other year, you know, the UCF wins, and the following year, you know, they lose. I don't think that's going to happen this year. I think they've got a great shot this year of breaking that cycle. You know, they return a lot of players. On their defense is going to be, again, a very, very tough unit. Last year, I think they were either first or second in the conference in total defense. They're they really, I think, can step it up. The big question marks are going to be on offense. You know, Bryn Harvey is injured. He injured himself in spring practice. Today, George O'Leary told Ilya Liman that he should be back in by mid-September in the lineup. That's a huge help to them. At quarterback, they have Rob Calabrese. Still some question marks there with him. You know, he's kind of been in and out of the lineup, and I think the thing is if he can step up and show that he can be the leader of this team, I think UCF's got a great chance.
I think what you need to get at the quarterback position, really no matter whose it is, and it is his job this year at UCF, and something they've been lacking for years now, is consistency. Week in and week out consistency. You can't have one good game and then completely fall off the radar the next. Having Harvey back, even if it's late September, is a plus, because you need him ready to go when you get to the conference season. But you know they're going to deliver it on defense. And Bruce Miller, who was the UCF guy, I believe, at the Conference USA means one of the leaders for Defensive Player of the Year probably in the conference, really anchors a defense that's going to stop teams. Just got to hope that on offense, UCF can find some way, as you know, like I said, the key word there is consistency. They need to be able to do it week in, week out to be successful in the Conference USA.
Yes, and you know, their schedules helps them out this year. You know, they have some games that just, you know, I think they've got a great shot of winning. You know, they open up with South Dakota. They play North Carolina State. That could be a tough one. Buffalo's rebuilding. I think their toughest games are going to be at Houston with Case Keenum. You know, the Cougars are expected to win the CUSA West. Southern Miss is here. I think that's always a tough game, even though they're kind of in the process of rebuilding. But other than that, I mean, their conference schedule is pretty weak. You know, Marshall, UAB, Rice, East Carolina is rebuilding. So I don't think there isn't anyone who could look at that schedule and think that they couldn't, you know, conceivably have a really good year.
I think so. I think we're finally going to see O'Leary's and his team build on a successful season. They were 8-5 last year. Maybe a bowl win is in the future this year. They still don't have one of those. There's a chance for another BCS team victory to go with the Alabama victory that seems just ages ago now. They go to Kansas State. It's on the road, but K-State, one of the bottom feeders of the Big 12, certainly not expected to really have that much this year. These are chances for UCF to have some landmark wins that they haven't been able to get, even with good teams, and they've got a solid foundation. It's just, as we said, it's a matter of O'Leary getting that out of his players.
Well, I also think, too, that, you know, there's been all this discussion about, you know, Conference USA and BCS busting and, you know, UCF trying to make a run at a BCS conference, you know, a strong BCS conference. I think to do that, UCF has to beat these BCS teams. They have to beat the Kansas States. You know, they have to beat North Carolina State. They have to beat these guys. And on a consistent basis, if you do that, then people start taking you seriously as a possible addition to a conference.
Yeah, UCF too often against those BCS schools. Close, but they don't quite finish it. When we come back, we're going to look at the national news, including making fun of a media member that really lost his way out in the WAC, coming up on College Football Weekly. And welcome back to College Football Weekly, brought to you by Orlando Sentinel, College Gridiron 365. My name is Brant Parsons, sitting with Matt Marshall, our first ever edition of this. We're going to take just a few moments now, look across the country at some of the big news. It's still slow, it's still summer, so it's not maybe loading up on the national wire and stuff going on, but there is stuff happening in college football. It is why we do things 365. And I guess we got to start with the one guy who wasn't at SEC Media Days, was mentioned a few times by the coaches, not in name, former Tennessee coach, now USC coach Lane Kiffin, who has some ties back to Tennessee, but he's not upsetting the Volunteers this time.
No. This past weekend, you know, he got into a situation where, you know, him and USC had went out and hired the Tennessee Titans NFL team, their running backs coach, hired them basically to become the offensive coordinator for the Trojans. The Titans head coach Jeff Fisher, who was a actual USC alum, wasn't too happy with the fact that how the hiring went down. Felt like Kiffin kind of went past him, you know, snuck past him to get the hire. Was very upset. Had some disparaging remarks about Kiffin, and then today we just found out that the Titans have decided to sue Kiffin and the USC for this. So once again, you know, Lane can't seem to find his way, you know, without getting in some sort of trouble every year.
You know, when he first came to Tennessee, I being where I come from, where I'm not an SEC apologist. I liked him kind of ruffling the feathers when he first came to the SEC, but boy, that was a long time ago when I had anything by me. He just, wherever he goes, he seems not just great waves, but just huge tidal waves of controversy. And now he's at a program that has been in, was in the news earlier this summer for all the trouble they got into. This can't look good for USC to go out and hire this guy, and now they're going to have to deal with a possible lawsuit. I mean, who knows what else he's going to bring there?
Well, it doesn't help them at all. You know, USC this past, I think it was about a week ago, hired Pat Hayden to take over to be the new athletic director for the program. You know, they had they're dealing with the sanctions put down by the NCAA considering on the Reggie Bush issue, O.J. Mayo. They're on probation as a school. They can't – you're on two-year probation. You know, they can't – you know, bowl banned. I think it's 4-year probation, 2-year bowl ban. You know, Hayden, one of the things he said was, you know, we want to try to get USC back to where it was before, you know, prominent and you know, clean program. This obviously doesn't really help that situation.
Last time they were clean, I think they were going 6-6 and had like 11 game losing streak to Notre Dame. I mean, USC got better when the program started to get a little dirty there. Speaking of off-the-field troubles, Oregon and in the Pac-10, the Pac-10 champ last year went to the Rose Bowl, lost to Ohio State. High expectations coming back this year for Oregon, and a lot of that was rested on the fact that Jeremiah Masoli was going to come back and be quarterback, got in just lots of trouble over the offseason, eventually to the point where he was kicked out of school and left and is looking for a new home. He may have actually found one in the SEC. I guess stories now have him close to at least admitting or saying that he wants to go play at Ole Miss.
Well, he turned in his paperwork to his scholarship release from Oregon to Ole Miss. He likes, you know, Houston Nutt over the weekend lost one of his quarterbacks. Raymond Cotton, you know, he's now down to two quarterbacks. So the idea of having a Jeremiah Masoli is very tempting for Nutt. You know, Masoli had some problems at Oregon. He was arrested twice. You know, once involving a stolen laptop. You know, once getting into a fight with a stolen laptop. Definitely, you know, one of those players that, you know, do you really want to add him to your team? He did graduate this summer, getting his undergraduate degree. So basically, the only way he still has a year of eligibility left. The only way he can go somewhere is if he finds a graduate program that Oregon does not have. So if Ole Miss, you know, has something like that, I don't know, maybe Southern History, something like that, that he can go to take, basket weaving, anything like that, he could end up there. He's also, his name's been thrown around for Hawaii and Louisiana Tech. So it's not definite 100% that he's going to Ole Miss, but I think he's checking his options.
I think Hawaii, about a week, within the last week, has said they may not want the headaches that come along with Masoli. So, but Ole Miss seems like a fit for him. I guess academically, is, you know, because the SEC is known for its academics. Academically, if he finds a way in, Houston Nutt certainly could really have some fun with a talent like Masoli. If he can keep his head straight and stay out of trouble, all of a sudden there's another quarterback to watch in the SEC.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, he's got an average arm, but he's a scrambler. You know, it's one of those. He wouldn't be anything like Javon Sneed that Nutt had. You know, last year he would definitely be a scrambler, but and I think that's exciting for that offense. You know, I think he could provide them with something. And the other thing, option is how quickly he could pick up the offense. You know, he's going to be coming in if this he decides to go there. He'd be coming in within, you know, a couple of weeks of camp starting. You know, can he grasp the offense? And I think he might be able to, and he could jump in and play pretty much right off the bat.
Interesting story to watch. I mean, it's a guy who was in trouble, but now the story is, it's almost like, oh, where's he going to end up? And we'll keep an eye on Masoli. By next week, we might already know where he is. And one last story this week that caught my attention when you brought it up is they have these media days, and all these media members go to them, and they've lost kind of some of their, I think, lure of years past, because now there's so much more access. You know, the teams aren't sending their best players. Used to be media days was the one chance you were going to get a chance to talk to all the coaches and all some of these players. But still, they still managed to get stories out of this. And out in the whack, just a wacky story that one media member may have been hitting the bar a little bit before a vote. I don't know.
Well, yeah, the WAC had their media day this week, and you know, the media members vote, the coaches vote, and the media members vote on for their poll of who's going to win the, you know, their division, the conference. And this week, you know, the media poll came out, and you know, Boise State was voted to be the favorite to win the WAC again, but Nevada got a first place vote, which is kind of interesting because, you know, in the coaches, in the coaches poll, it's the same way, but you know, the coaches aren't allowed to vote on each in each team. You know,
right, so Boise State, they have to vote for somebody else.
Yeah, so that's normally what happens is the Boise State coach, Chris Pearson, votes for, you know, probably Nevada. But the media members don't have to. They can vote for whoever. And someone obviously believes that Nevada is better than Boise State this year, which I'm not quite sure what, you know, what person thought about that. But I think that's a strange story.
I mean, Nevada's probably the team that can can give Boise State the best run for a WAC title this year. They'll find out on November 26th, one of the last games of the year. They play each other on a Friday night. But when we talk about Boise State, we're talking about a team that you're looking at them and thinking they get past Virginia Tech that first game of the year. This is a team that could not only bust the BCS, could find themselves making their way into the national title game. Boise State's going to have a high ranking this year. And one of the problems for these BCS busting teams is they don't necessarily always start with the high ranking, and just the infallacies of the polls, it takes a while to move up sometimes if you start low. Boise State's going to be starting at the top, and they've got a schedule, they've got a team to do it. So nobody would look at the WAC with any sort of intelligence and say, oh, yeah, that's Nevada's to lose.
Well, no. You know, Boise State returns 22 of the 24 starters, which is an incredible – I mean, that's, you know, almost the same exact same team as they had last year, a team that went undefeated, mind you. So, you know, to say that, you know, they're going to be worse off than this year, I will say this. You know, Nevada did play Boise State tough the last three times they met. Very tough games. You know, they you know, Boise State came from behind to win. You know, Colin Kaepernick is a good quarterback, a scrambling type quarterback. In fact, for a while there last year, he led the country in rushing as a quarterback. He you know, they have the talent. They have a really good defense too. I'm not saying it's unheard of that they could beat, you know, Boise State. I just think if Boise State's undefeated going into that game, I'd be hard pressed to go with Nevada on that one.
Yeah, and it's not, like we said, that's why they play the games. It's certainly capable of Nevada's capable of beating Boise State. Took them to four overtimes in 2007, lost by a touchdown in 2008. Last year, hung close with them, ended up losing by 11 when it was all said and done, and they get to host Boise State. So. Yeah. There's a reason that they play the games. There's a reason that we watch them. But it just, you got to wonder sometimes what some of these media guys are doing when they make their votes this early.
It kind of reminds you a little bit of the situation last year when Steve Spurrier, you know, left Tim Tebow off, you know, the all SEC team, you know, and, you know, the furor that caused, you know, everyone got upset. And then later on, Spurrier admitted, well, I really didn't even vote. You know, it was
right.
It was our, you know, a media guy who voted. You know? So, I mean, you got to wonder who, you know, this is actually voted by the press, so you wonder who actually thought, you know, that Nevada deserves it. But, you know, everyone gets their own opinion, so, I mean, I guess it'll be interesting to find out who it was.
Yeah, and it gives us something to talk about. And media days continue this week. They'll be done soon. Camps are going to start opening up, and we're going to be with you every week of the year talking college football, the best sport out there. This has been College Football Weekly. My name is Brant Parsons. For Matt Michelle, we will talk to you next week as we bring you the best of college football from all across the land.